This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The consumers. The consumers are the heroes of planet Earth, especially American consumers. We hold the economy of the Earth together. More than 70% of our GDP is because we like to push the Amazon button or go shopping or buy new things. We're good at it. I welcome Julia Cartwright, a senior research fellow in law and economics at the American Institute for Economic Research, writing for Civitas Outlook, part of Civitas Institute at the University of Texas at Austin, to identify, yes, the consumers are heroic, but the younger consumers have a very low opinion of the genius of capitalism and have a very high opinion of the less than persuasive socialism. Why? Because the consumers are suffering being ill-treated by our corporate masters. Julia, a very good evening to you. You make an excellent case that capitalism is fine, but corporatism is not. Is there an easy version of corporatism before we get on to rent seeking? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thank you very much for having me. The best way to understand corporatism or crony capitalism is thinking about politics and business being intertwined rather than separate. So as you pointed out, many folks have, especially younger generations, have a very negative view of what they conceptualize as capitalism, but that isn't the markets on their own or businesses on their own. That is typically the entanglement, if you will, of both government and business.
And it comes in many forms. It's not just one version of cronyism. Let's start with rent seeking. What is it and how does it work right now for the corporations?
Rent seeking is a concept where businesses or individuals invest in politics rather than investing in their business. And they typically do this to win favors. Lobbying is a perfect example of rent seeking. Businesses spending money on lobbyists to curry favor with Washington, D.C., they would like specific carve-outs for their industry. They would like specific subsidies for their industry. So rent-seeking is a form of what economists call unproductive entrepreneurship. It's not entrepreneurship in the sense where we serve the consumer. It's businesses trying to be entrepreneurial as in the best way that they can be effective at lobbying.
And the lobbying, you mean actually what we see in Washington when there's a bill or an act proposed on the floor of Congress. There are actually parties held and gatherings and dinners.
Oh, yes.
You mean festivities are going on. It's not just guys with cigars in back rooms. It's a way of life in Congress. Is that correct?
Absolutely. When you're in DC, you can spot a lobbyist from a mile away. They are very good looking, very quick talking, and absolutely dialed into the social scene of DC.
Let's choose industries as to how it works in specific. Healthcare. How does cronyism, corporatism work for healthcare?
Healthcare is the number one industry that spends money on lobbying, and they spend hundreds of millions of dollars per year. They are absolutely number one. Healthcare industries, pharmaceutical industries, you can think of big pharma or any type of big healthcare industry, sends lobbyists to DC to primarily carve out various subsidies for specific pharmaceutical products. The healthcare industry is also very heavily subsidized through Medicare and Medicaid, subsidized insurance. So healthcare is number one, followed by, you can think of tech and electronics, which spend just a little bit under $200 million in lobbying each year.
I tell an anecdote from my youth. Once upon a time, Bill Gates was running a company called Microsoft. Maybe you've heard of it.
And I have.
Microsoft,
small company.
Microsoft was keen on the idea of desktop computers. This is in the late 20th century. And you buy a box of software that you put into your computer and sit there. No internet, no connection. You're by yourself in an elaborate typewriter. Well, Bill Gates was identified as a person who was innocent of the ways of Washington because he had exactly two lobbyists in Washington while he was making money. Now I think that I don't know how many lobbyists Microsoft has in Washington. It's too many to count, and there are too many departments. So there was a rise in the number of lobbyists for Microsoft as Microsoft's profits grew to the giant that it is today. Is this a coincidence to your understanding, Julia, or is this the way of Washington? The number of lobbyists tell people how much money you want to make.
Great observation, John, and absolutely not a coincidence. And to your previous point, Bill Gates was a little bit naive in the way that Washington worked. So he has subsequently invested a lot into his rent seeking in Washington, D.C. We see, and this is through both Democrat and Republican administrations. This is not unique to one party or the other. This is a very bipartisan issue in the fact that Washington has said, we are open to being influenced. So it's incumbent upon businesses to build up their lobbying arm if Washington is going to favor some specific businesses over others. It's actually very good business for them, any type of firm, healthcare, tech, energy, to be investing into influence in Washington in order that they're able to carve out that industry, or excuse me, that influence for their specific business. So it's become very smart business to be investing more in Washington.
My favorite example, I had no idea this was going on, is airlines. This is actually funny. How do airlines lobby, and what is it to follow around the map the Secretary of Transportation at any one epoch? What happens?
Great question. So lobbyists or favoritism doesn't necessarily come in the form of just a check. And as you referenced, airlines will actually increase the number of flights if you are a chair of the transportation committee from that individual's home district to DC and back. So they increase the number of flights by a substantial percentage oftentimes. And they are favoring and they're providing an in-kind transfer, if you will, to these specific individuals and showing favoritism, not necessarily in a check, but providing their transportation a lot easier.
Real estate, everybody understands how that works, but the National Association of Realtors, are they the same as Congress? I can't tell anymore.
The realtors are absolutely slick with their lobbying, one of the biggest spenders, and they're focused on promoting individuals in Congress who are going to be realtor friendly is what they're focused on.
Regulatory capture is another way of regarding capitalism as less than a desirable. This is for my children are millennials, and younger than that is Gen Z. The polling shows consistently that they have a good opinion of socialism without defining it, because they have a very poor opinion of capitalism. So do I when it comes to regulatory capture. How does it work, Julia?
Regulatory capture is a concept, and you can think of it about it as the government being the referee within an industry. So an industry, per rent seeking, is effectively able to capture specific regulation that favors incumbents. So an example of this, and again, this is across both Democrat and Republican administrations, but a good example of this in the Biden administration would be the CHIPS and Science Act. So this is over $50 billion to big tech firms. So these tech firms have effectively captured that specific regulation and that bucket of money that's going towards semiconductor manufacturing, specifically for a small subset of firms. In the Trump administration, a great example of regulatory capture would be the purchase of about 10% of Intel. Intel, before the government purchase, was struggling a lot. The consumers had said, you know, Intel's a little bit behind the game with their semiconductor manufacturing. They are not up to the levels of NVIDIA, and therefore the valuation of Intel was going down. The Trump administration steps in and says, we are going to purchase over 10% of this company, which is just a great example of government favoritism and turning a market loser into a government winner after this influence.
All right. We've been examining rent seeking. There are many more examples. It is Washington, or it is the state capital, because it happens in both places. But now a new term, rent extraction. What is that, Julia?
So rent extraction is, you can think of it as politicians threatening costly action towards businesses if they're not within compliance. And I'll give three examples, one from each of the three past administrations. So the Obama administration, in their effort to curb carbon emissions, instituted what's called CAFE standards. And this is corporate average fuel economy standards. And you may have remembered that in this, the aftermath of the CAFE standards, many more car companies were creating hybrid or electric cars that didn't necessarily see a lot of consumer demand. These various car companies had to create a fleet that corresponded with these CAFE standards. So they were artificially providing the market with both hybrid and electric vehicles that were not necessarily demanded by the market. And we are seeing this in 2025, probably more than ever, especially with a lot of the sunset of some of these electric vehicle subsidies. So CAFE standards is a good example of rent extraction where the government is forcing the hand of business into compliance.
Please continue. I love these examples. A second example.
So under the Biden administration, very famously, they threatened in our COVID era and just a little bit post-COVID, there was a huge congressional investigation that demonstrated how the Biden White House threatened Google, Facebook, and Amazon to suppress various speech about vaccines, various speech about the just the pandemic in general, which later have found that this speech was actually more in line with what we understand to be the impact of the coronavirus today. So the Biden administration threatened many of these companies into compliance under what message they wanted the American citizen to hear. Under the Trump administration, a great example of rent extraction is their tariffs. So the Trump administration is specifically targeting industries like steel and aluminum. They are targeting medium to large size trucks. And so they're specifically trying to force these various industries into compliance. And depending on where your industry is, you are not uniformly targeted by these various tariffs.
Julia Fletcher, commenting on the consumer paying twice or three times or four, whatever you want, because we have to pay for all these examples that she's given us. She's a senior research fellow in law and economics at the American Institute for Economic Research. And when we come back, what is to be done? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.